tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground. This is a place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. I want to say good day, everybody. I hope everyone out there actually is doing, having a pretty good day. Okay, so today, though, man, I'll be talking about healthcare, one of the most important issues in America. I'll be covering mental health, disparities, obesity, the business side of healthcare, veterans' health, and the future of medicine. But before I actually dive into my actual topic today, I just want to say something. A few days ago, as we all know by now, that a young man by the name of Charlie Kirk got murdered by someone. And despite of what, you know what I mean, your thoughts, you know what I mean? First of all, I want to say, you can't blame people for feeling how they felt about this man, right? But despite of it all, though, you know what I mean? He still had a family, he had a wife, and he has young children, you know what I mean? So now his children will grow up without a dad, without a father. And his wife will grow up without a husband. You know what I mean? And to me, it's so sad, though, that when all this stuff that's going on in this earth, right? You know what I mean? The United States government can't figure out a way to make some kind of common sense gun law. Some kind of gun law, you know what I mean? Because to me, and this is how I feel, right? Everybody probably feels more different than me, right? But I don't believe a regular civilian should have any kind of rifle or any kind of assault weapon. That's how I feel, right? And besides what happened to Charlie Kirk, you know, the same day, it was a school shooting in Evergreen, Colorado. The same day it happened. And I was just in Evergreen, Colorado that same day when the school shooting happened. You know what I mean? And it just saddened me that our government won't try to figure out a way to try to make some kind of common sense gun law to protect the citizens of the United States. Okay, now, with all that being said, right, and I want one more thing. May the young man rest in peace. May he rest in peace. That's all I got to say about that. Now, my first topic today is mental health, right? And mental health and realities. Okay, so I'm going to say this. I never really, you know, got into mental health until I really started working at a mental health facility. And working at a mental health facility and seeing what a lot of these patients go through on a daily basis. That's where my passion really came into mental health, right? So, according to the CDC, about 1 in 5 adults in the United States live with a mental illness, showing how widespread the issue really is. CDC data shows that depression affects nearly 5% of United States adults, and this number has been rising since the pandemic. The pandemic has actually, increased a lot of people, mental illness. The CDC also discussed adolescents, and it reported about 29% of high school students said their mental health was not good most of the time. Research indicates stigma continues to prevent many adults from seeking treatment, even when affordable options are available. Now, the CDC also shows only 14% of adults received counseling or therapy in the past year, a gap between need and access. Let me say that one more time. The CDC findings show only 14% of adults received counseling or therapy in the past year. A gap between need and access. Studies highlight that women are more likely than men to report depression and anxiety, showing gender disparities in care. The CDC also discussed child data about About 11% of children ages 3 to 17 have been diagnosed with some kind of anxiety or some kind of disorders. The CDC also reports that about 4% of children in the same age group have been diagnosed with depression. Emergency department visits for mental health crises are increasing, especially among youth, according to CDC surveillance. Research has found that untreated depression increases the risk of chronic diseases linking mental health and physical health. Studies show that early intervention improves outcomes, but delays in diagnosis remain in a critical barrier. Mental health, according to the CDC, is one of the leading drivers of disability in the United States, right? So these are all factual information according to the CDC. And I'm telling you, if anybody that's listening to this to me right now, if you have any kind of mental health or something going on with you, please go out there and seek help. There's nothing wrong with you getting help when it comes to your mental health, okay? You know, sometimes, especially people in my community, in the Black community, especially Black men, a lot of times they think, oh, you're weak, you're soft if you go talk to somebody. But sometimes, though, it's really good to really talk to someone and get things off your chest, because if you do not get things off your chest and talk to somebody, eventually you're going to explode and you're going to probably do something that you might regret, right? Do not do a permanent decision based on temporary feelings, according to Charlemagne, the God, right? So I'm asking you people out there, when it comes to your mental health, it is really good to really get the help that you deserve, even if something not really as serious as you think, you will never know. Okay? So I do believe that it is good to really sit down and talk to somebody just to get things off your chest. You know, trust me, I guarantee you might feel better. And I'm not talking about going to talk to your homeboys or your homegirls, your buddies. I'm talking about talking to a professional person that can really help you. Okay? And who knows, though? You never know until you seek it. When I was a tech on the floor working at a mental health hospital, and I would do my little class with them, you know what I mean? I would always talk to them. I say, look, all y'all is in here, right? The hospital I worked in. You have to have insurance to really be in the hospital. And all y'all are in here. Some of y'all might not want to be here, but guess what, though? You have insurance. So why not utilize your insurance to get the help that you deserve? It's not the help that you need, but the help that you deserve, okay, when it comes to your mental health. You know what I mean? If you get a little cough right now, you're quick to go to the ER, right? Something small, you're quick to go to the ER. Your mind, your brain is part of your body as well. So it's really good to really seek help and get the help that you deserve, because you will never know what that therapist or the psychiatrist or the psychologist, whatever, could really find and dig deep down within side of you. Okay, so my next topic, right? I'm talking about health disparities and access, right, to care. So, according to the VA, in 2023, about 40% of veterans using VA healthcare received some services via a telehealth, showing a shift in access, right? So the VA data also shows over 770 rural veterans use telehealth for more than 2.9 million visits in 1 year. A VA study reported that before the pandemic, rural veterans used telehealth more for primary care, but during COVID, urban use outpaced them. The same study found rural areas lagged in mental health telehealth, highlighting uneven care distribution. Research shows telehealth video visits are less common in rural areas due to broadband limitations and lower tech adoption. Social factors such as income, education, and geography remain major predictors of healthcare access gaps. Transportation barriers continue to keep rural and low-income patients from receiving timely care. According to health care access studies, insurance status strongly influence whether patients seek preventative or urgent care. Language barriers and cultural differences also create inequalities in how patients engage with providers. The shortage of primary care and mental health providers in underserved areas is a long-standing challenge. Policy gaps like limited reimbursement or cross-state telehealth licensing further restrict equitable care. Mobile clinics and community health workers have shown promise in bridging access gaps where permanent clinics don't exist, right? So this is according to the VA. So now, you know, I'm a veteran, and I'm telling you something right now. When it comes to this telehealth, I got to be honest with you. A lot of times it's a lifesaver for me, you know, because sometimes I got to make a VA appointment, you know, and I'll be so happy when my doctor says the person that's, that this appointment will be over the telephone. So guess what? I don't have to leave, like miss work, especially when you punch the clock, you know what I mean? Because sometimes it's hard for, you know, you got to work, pay your bills, but then you got to go to your damn doctor's appointment. You know, you understand that? So it's good that this telehealth actually came out. You know what I mean? So some people, though, in rural areas, like in the really country areas, though, sometimes it's really hard for them to get the telehealth because maybe they might not have internet access. You understand that? You know what I mean? Or good quality internet access. So I do believe that that at least the local government or somebody should invest in those rural areas so they can get internet access. You know what I mean? Especially a lot of those people who do not really have the money to really get access to the internet. You know what I mean? Because I'm telling you, telehealth, to me, like I said, is a lifesaver, right? Telehealth, you know, because sometimes, you know, unless you might go for your blood work and stuff like that, you know, you don't really have to go in there to really see a doctor unless there's something serious like that, you know what I'm saying, that you got to talk to your doctor about. But for like your routine checkup, a routine doctor appointment that you don't even make, you know what I mean? Telehealth to me is a wonderful thing, you know what I mean? Along you have one of these right here, your phone, your computer, you understand me? Internet access, I'm telling you right now, telehealth is a must. And I'm also going to tell you something that's a plus too. These apps now that a lot of the doctor's offices be having, man. The damn apps that we're having, where you can just go in the apps and make a doctor's appointment. You don't really need to talk to nobody. You make a doctor's appointment. If you need medication, oh God, these apps are great. You know what I mean? You can send a message to your doctor and say, "Doc, hey, I need this and this medication." You understand that? So I believe, you know what I mean, when the way technology is going now, I'm telling you something right now. To me, it is great. And I'm hoping, man, I know that a lot of doctor's offices do not have that. And a lot of them need to get rid of the program. I really believe that. These doctor's office, man, need to get to the program. Because I'm going to tell you right now, when I live in Hinesville, Georgia, and when I used to take my damn mother to her damn doctor's appointment, my mom was in her 80s, right? So I'll take her to her damn doctor's appointment. And I swear, she'd be in her damn doctor's office for like 3-4 damn hours. Because I always feel that these damn doctors be overbooking just to get the damn money. You know what I mean? Just because the people are on Medicare, right? You know what I mean? And I asked them one time, do they have like, I know like with me with the VA, I got the app I could use, you know what I mean, when I need to make my appointment or whatever. But her doctor appointment, they didn't have the little app or nothing where you could make your appointment or message your doctor. You know what I mean? So I believe though, man, that if a lot of these doctor's offices do not have it, they need to invest. They really need to invest in the app, you know what I mean, in the ways to do telehealth, because that could cut down a lot of time in the damn doctor's office, though. Because there's no way, if I'm going to come to that doctor's office and I got to spend 3 hours there, that's crazy to me. That's stupid, ridiculous. That's going to make me not want to come back to the damn doctor's office if I got to spend that damn long. You know what I mean? You sometimes you go in there and say your appointment at 1 o'clock. Sometimes you don't leave there till freaking 5 o'clock or something like that. 4:30 to 5 o'clock. What kind of crap is that, man? Yeah. So some of the offices need to do better. And with this technology that's there, you understand that it is really very, very, very helpful. And it's a blessing that it's great technology because they can also reduce waiting time as well. All right. So next topic, right? Let's talk about obesity and nurses' perspective, right? So according to the CDC, nearly 42% of U.S. adults are considered obese, making it one of the country's most widespread in health health issues, right? Nurses report that obesity is often linked to socioeconomic factors like food deserts, and limited access to safe exercise spaces. CDC research shows obesity raises risk for diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and some cancers. Many nurses say they feel undertrained in obesity management, which can affect patient education and support. Studies note weight stigma in healthcare, where patients feel judged can discourage them from seeking treatment. Childhood obesity remains a concern, with about 20% of U.S. Children aged 6 to 19 affected, according to the CDC data. Nurses emphasizes prevention in schools and communities as key to reducing obesity's long-term impact. Access to affordable, healthy food remains a barrier. Research shows lower-income neighborhoods often lack fresh produce. Insurance coverage for weight loss programs and bariatric surgery is inconsistent, leaving many without options. Technology like apps and telehealth coaching can help, but not all patients have equal access. Nurses have reported success when working with dietitians in team-based obesity management programs. CDC findings suggest lifestyle interventions are effective, but need sustained community support to last, right? Now, when it comes to obesity, right, especially in the Black and the Hispanic community, obesity is very widespread in the Black and the Hispanic community. You know what I mean? Called the lack of access to healthy food. Now, when you go to the Black neighborhood, right? What do you see a lot? A lot of them fast food restaurants. That's it. There's really any balance in these Black neighborhood, right? You know what I mean? When you go to a lot of these grocery stores in these Black neighborhoods and stuff like that, what a lot of times they sell a lot of unhealthy choices for people when it comes to obesity, right? They serve a lot. They sell a lot of unhealthy stuff instead of more vegetables, more fruits, and all that great stuff that we need. You know, some people, right, have the lack of access. Some of them, the socioeconomic factors play a big deal, right? Even when you're going into the grocery store and you want the healthy option, why the healthy options are more expensive than unhealthy options? I don't think that's right. The healthy options should be cheaper than the unhealthy options, right? You know what I mean? Another thing too, right? Especially when it comes to a lot of us black folks too, man. A lot of us, we love our fried chicken. We love our catfish. You know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with eating those type of food. But we do need to eat those type of things in moderation as well. Instead, you fry the chicken, why don't you bake the chicken instead? You know what I mean? Put a little bit of seasoning on it and bake it. Instead, you fry the fish, you bake the fish, right? You see what I'm saying? Right? So those are things that we as black folks need to start doing a lot more. You know what I mean? And not only that, we need to start promoting more healthy options. A lot of times when you watch the daggone TV, especially in the black area, I don't know how the rhythm does it, but a lot of times with the algorithm, I really feel though some of these commercials be targeting black people. Because if you're going to, in a white neighborhood, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time when you're going to like somebody's home that live in a good, nice neighborhood, you're not going to see too much, say, McDonald's commercial on the TV that much. You know what I mean? I'm just using that as an example. You know what I mean? They're not going to be promoting a lot of unhealthy stuff on their TVs. But if you go into the black neighborhood on their damn TVs, on the commercial, they'll all be promoting a lot of unhealthy stuff. You know what I mean? And then we as black people, we see that like, I want to try that. Ooh, that looks so good, man. I need to try that right there. See what I'm saying? You know what I mean? That's what they do, right? So I do believe that we need to do better, man, as a society, for real. We really need to do better, you know what I mean? Because right now, even like me moving to Colorado, and I see how these people move over here, everybody's exercising, and that's one thing we don't do a lot. We don't go there and go walking as we should, right? We don't exercise like we should. You know what I mean? And I think we really need to start doing that a lot more. Now, let's discuss the business of healthcare a little bit, okay? So, according to the American Hospital Association, U.S. hospitals provide over $40 billion in uncompensated care each year. Think about it, right? The U.S. healthcare provide over $40 billion in uncompensated care. Because even like I said, right, where I worked at the mental health hospital where I worked at. You know what I mean? Even if a person is suicidal, they call it 1013 in Georgia. And if the person is suicidal and they go to the ER, when the ER calls that mental health hospital, it's the law that they have to take the patient if the patient is suicidal. And they got to keep them for at least 72 hours. Right? So imagine if a patient do not have insurance. I mean, the hospital that we just took the patient and the hospital, mental health hospital, just lost money. So medical debt also remains the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States, affecting millions of households, man. Imagine sometimes you go to them for surgery and the surgery costs like $50,000, $60,000. People can't afford those type of things. You know what I mean? So people got to, file bankruptcy because of the medical debt. Research shows hospitals often rely on elective procedures and specialty care to stay profitable. So, you know what I mean, your hospital might be known for certain things, right? And you do multiple things at your hospital. But sometimes, a lot of times, you might have to do things out of the box. As a hospital owner, or CEO, I said, damn, I'm losing money because I'm taking a lot of these patients who don't have any insurance. So what I need to do, right? Okay, let's figure something else how we can stay above water, right? Now, drug pricing is a major issue with insulin costs highlighted as an example of unaffordable life-saving medicine. Insurance complexity, co-pays, deductibles, and network restrictions remain a barrier to timely care. Studies warn that private equity ownership in healthcare can prioritize profits over patient outcomes, right? That's what a lot of these hospitals do, right? They prioritize profits over patients. Profits over patients. That's what they do instead of patients over profits, right? All they care about is the bottom line. I understand that it's a business and you got to make money. But when are we going to start caring about the patients, though? The people that come to the hospital, right? So many hospitals shift costs to privately insured patients to make up for lower Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement. From what I gathered, I understand about Medicaid and Medicare, that a lot of times they're only going to cap at a certain point, right? So if your your treatment or whatever you do costs $1,000, right? Let's say it costs $1,000. Medicaid is only going to cap it at $800. You know what I mean? So now the hospital is losing that $200, right? So what's going to happen? You know who's going to have to take the cost up? The private insurance. The private insurance is will take up the cost of the money that Medicaid or Medicare is not spending. That's why a lot of business, hospital, doctor's office do not take straight Medicaid or Medicare, right? A lot of them, look, they got to be managed Medicare. Like, you know what I'm saying? I got Medicaid, but I also got Humana. You know what I'm saying? So you have to have two insurance combined in one. So Medicaid will be your primary insurance, and then Humana will be your minor insurance, right? And whatever Medicaid don't pay, then Humana, you know what I mean, will come and pay. You know what I'm saying? Because yeah, Medicaid don't cap. Which kind of understandable, because think about it. Look at how many people that are Medicaid. A lot of people, you know? Trust me, Medicaid is tough. Medicaid and Medicare has been on since the 60s. And it's a wonderful thing for Americans today to have. Preventive care remained underfunded despite evidence it reduced long-term system cost. The pharmaceutical, right? Pharmaceutical benefit managers face criticism for their opaque role in drug pricing. Mergers and consolidations often reduce competition, leading to higher prices for patients. Policy efforts like surprise billing laws aim to reduce unexpected costs, but are still limited impact, right? I think when it comes to the surprise billing, I think that's one thing that Joe Biden, I think, did, I don't know if it's still in effect, right, where a lot of these companies, man, especially like the airlines, these hospitals and stuff like that, a lot of them, we put these unexpected billing, you know what I'm saying, on the invoice, you know what I mean? Which is crazy to me. You see what I'm saying? To me, which is crazy. You should, when a person, no, I don't say if the insurance company paying for it, whatever, but I think you still should know. But if you have to pay for this damn thing, right, they should tell you upfront each itemized thing and how much everything, each thing will cost you. As the payer of this thing, because some of these things, the price are ridiculous to me, very ridiculous. So value-based care models, where providers are paid for outcomes, not volume or growing, but face slow adoption, right? Yeah, so I'm telling you, right, a lot of these things I got from the American Hospital Association and the Kaiser Family Foundation healthcare costs. I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, back in the day, I used to have Kaiser health insurance. I was in my 20s, man. I paid for that, right? We only had one child at the time. So it was me and my daughter. And Kaiser, to me, is a damn good insurance company to have. That's what I feel. I had it back in the day. I really believe it's still good. So now, Let's talk about veterans' health a little bit. So, according to the VA, about 9 million veterans are enrolled in the VA healthcare system, and I'm one of them. I'm a VA. I'm a vet, and I'm enrolled in the healthcare system for the VA. VA reports show that mental health services, including PTSD care, are among the most used benefits, right? PTSD, because one of the thing about the, I'm telling you, right, I know when I got out of the military, right, and I can't speak for everybody, because everybody's story is different. But I'm telling you right now, at least for the foreseeable future, I can never talk in the ill will about the VA or the Army, because they took care of me. I got to be honest with you. Because the first thing they asked me when I was retiring, do I want to see a therapist? That's one of the first things that they asked me. You know what I mean? Do I want to see a therapist? So I'm saying, because PTSD is bad. Because, you know, I got that. PTSD is really bad amongst a lot of veterans, especially when you've been overseas and you see a lot, right? You go deploy with your buddy and you come back home, but your damn battle buddy that you deployed with didn't come back home. So suicide prevention remained a top priority, with veterans accounting for about 14% of adult suicide in the U.S. each year. And I'm telling you, so many soldiers when I was then committed suicide, man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, one time there was a soldier, and we're looking for him the next day to come to work. Next to find out, I was in South Korea at the time. And come to find out, this guy hung himself in his room. And the day before we saw him at work, he was happy-go-lucky. We did not know. So it happened, man. So suicide prevention is a very serious thing for veterans. Rural veterans face special challenges with fewer clinics and longer travel times for care. The VA has expanded telehealth programs, serving over 770,000 rural veterans in 2023, right? Research shows social detriments like housing, instability, and unemployment raise health risks for veterans, right? And I will say, man, in 2025, there should never be any homeless vet. You know what I mean? And one thing I would say, right, that the United States government should take care of these damn vets. Get them the treatment that they need, that they deserve, so they can be off the daggone street. Wait time for specialty services like mental health or prosthetic remains are a problem despite recent improvement, right? Some veterans report challenges transitioning from military to civilian healthcare coverage. A lot of challenges out there too. Caregivers of veterans often face financial and emotional strain with limited outside support. PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and substance use disorder remain common and require long-term treatment. The VA's whole health model emphasizes holistic care, including physical, emotional, and social health. Community partnerships with local hospital and nonprofit helps fill the gaps in the VA. Right? Which is good, though, man, about the community partnership stuff. And that's one thing I do believe a lot of healthcare facility needs, too, man. Community partnership, because sometimes it might be a small clinic, a small thing, and you might not be able to do it alone. So it's good to partner with the community outside of your facility to ensure that people get the help that they deserve. Now let's talk about future of care and technology, man. According to the American Medical Informatics Association, telehealth visit rose from 14% to 58% of VA care during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm telling you, everybody definitely was on telehealth during the COVID-19. I know I was. If I didn't have to go get my blood work, whenever I go to the doctor, I was talking to my dad and my doctor's tool, Teams or Zoom or something. Research shows telehealth especially benefits patients with chronic conditions, disability, or limited transportation. That's another good thing about telehealth. However, the digital divide, lack of broadband and devices remains a barrier for rural and low-income communities, right? I believe, too, if you're a veteran and you're a low-income veteran and you serve this country, the one thing you should never be lack of is internet service. They should give you a phone for free. You know what I mean? Make sure you have housing. All the good stuff, man. We should take care of our veterans, for real. Privacy concerns are growing with patients asking who owns and secure their medical data. Artificial intelligence is being tested for diagnostics but carries risk of bias if not carefully managed. Remote monitoring tools like wearables can detect health problems early and reduce hospital visits. Personalized medicine using genetics is expanding, but high costs limit access for many patients. Telepsychiatry is growing, offering mental health support to underserved areas. And electronic health record, which is a great thing, man, still faces inoperability issues, limited coordination across providers, right? So, at least with me in the military and a veteran, you know what I mean? If I'm moving from state to state, I don't have to bring my medical records with me. You know what I mean? At least for me anyway. Everybody's different, right? But some providers, though, it also depends on your provider and if they have the EHR. You know what I mean? If, like, for example, if you get a new provider, will they get it from the old providers? So cross-state licensing challenges slow down telehealth adoption, according to health policy research. Studies suggest that AI and data tools may save costs, but must be closely regulated for fairness. Technology promises progress, but risks widen inequities if access gaps aren't closed, right? Technology promises progress, but it risks widen inequity if access gaps aren't closed. Okay, so I got a direct reference from the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association and Medical Care Telehealth Disparities, right? So prevention and public policy. According to the CDC, preventive care like screenings and vaccine save lives and reduces long-term costs, man. You know what I'm saying? Like this fool, Robert Kennedy damn Jr., you know what I'm saying, the anti-vaxxer. And this man is in charge of the Home Health Service, HHS. You know what I'm saying? He's the man that's in charge of that. But yet, he's talking negativeness about vaccine. Crazy to me, man. Oh, man, it makes me sick to my stomach when I see stuff like that. So research shows school-based programs improve early detection of mental, vision, and dental issues. Sugar taxes and tobacco regulations have lowered consumption in communities where they are enforced. Public health funding has declined in recent decades, weakening the nation's ability to prevent disease outbreak. CDC data links food insecurity to higher rates of chronic illness like diabetes and hypertension. Clean air and water policies directly reduce hospitalization for respiratory and heart conditions. Research shows expanding Medicaid improves access to preventive care in underserved populations. Mental health parity laws required insurers to treat mental and physical health equally, but enforcement is uneven. Paid sick leave policy reduced workplace spread of illness and improved recovery time. Walkable city design and bike lanes are associated with healthy population. Studies confirm that investing in prevention reduces the burden on emergency rooms and urgent care. Studies confirm that investing in prevention reduces the burden on emergency rooms and urgent care. Prevention policies often pay off years, but political system prefers short-term results, creating tension. Now, patient stories, right, and experience. According to patient advocacy reports, people with obesity often feel judged, with discouraged, is care seeking. Rural patients describe long drives and lack of specialties as their biggest barriers to healthcare. Veterans share stories of struggling to transition from the VA to civilian care, citing confusion over coverage. Some families report telehealth has been life-changing, especially for children with chronic conditions. Caregivers of people with mental illness often face burnout and limited financial support. Nurses report frustrations with short appointment time that prevent holistic patient conversations, right? Conversations. One thing my doctor told me one time at the VA that, you know what I'm saying, that they got to hug with their patients, man. They give the doctor like 30 minutes to get each patient in and out. Crazy to me. Medical debt forces many patients to skip preventative care, creating worse health problems later. Peer support groups give patients with PTSD and addiction a sense of community and healing. Immigrant families often face cultural and language barriers that complicate provider relationships. High school students describe social media pressure as fueling anxiety and depression. Patients without insurance or with high deductibles often delay needed care, worsening conditions. Elderly patients face unique struggles, multiple prescriptions, mobility issues, and difficulty using new technology. So ethical tensions, right? According to the AMA Journal of Ethics, balancing patient privacy with the need for data sharing is one of healthcare's toughest dilemma. Research shows that high treatment costs create ethical questions when life-saving care is available but unaffordable. Studies warned that artificial intelligence in diagnostics may replicate racial and gender biases found in training data. Public health policies like soda taxes raise ethical debates over personal freedom versus societal health benefits. The VA and other systems often face ethical choices about prioritizing care for veterans versus civilians. End-of-life care research highlights conflict between extending life and maintaining quality of life. Pandemic studies show triage decisions like who gets ventilators first spark ethical dispute worldwide. Yeah, that was a big thing during the pandemic. Patients often don't fully understand the trade-off in virtual care, raising concerns about informed consent. Transparency in pricing remains an ethical issue, as many patients cannot know cause before procedures. Research confirms that stigma around obesity, mental health, or identity still influences the quality of care received. Clinical trials historically underrepresented minorities, raising ethical concerns about fairness and inclusion. Nurses report experience moral distress when system constraints prevent them from providing the care patients deserve. So now, innovation, right, and success. According to the VA, reports rural telehealth programs have reduced wait times and improved access for isolated veterans. Research shows virtual care expansion during COVID improved chronic disease management in underserved groups. Integrated care models where mental health providers work alongside primary care to reduce stigma and improve outcomes. Community-based obesity programs in schools and churches have shown measurable improvements in lifestyle changes. Peer support programs reduce isolation from patients with PTSD, depression, and addiction. Wearable devices help patients track heart rate, blood sugar, and activity, leading to early intervention. Teleradiology and teledermatology expand specialty care for rural clinics. Artificial intelligence tools are being tested for early detection for diabetes and heart disease with promising accuracy. Mobile health vans bring care direct to underserved neighborhoods, especially for preventive services. Value-based care programs show better patient satisfaction when providers are rewarded for outcomes. The federal No Surprise Act reduced unexpected medical bills for many patients. Public health campaign designed with community input see higher participation and trust. Some challenges, right? According to the FCC, about 22% of rural Americans lack broadband access, limited telehealth options. Insurance companies often use refused full reimbursement for obesity treatment, or telehealth creating barriers to care. Research shows a nation shortage of mental health professionals, especially in rural states. Cross-state licensing laws slow down the growth of virtual healthcare. Language and cultural barriers keep many minorities groups from fully engaging with healthcare system. Misinformation, especially online, worsens patient distrust and reduces vaccine uptake. Patients who lose insurance due to job changes face dangerous gaps in care. Public health departments remain underfunded compared to hospital and specialty care. Studies confirm that AI systems trained on limited data often underperform for minority populations, right? So some policies and reform ideas. So according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, expanding Medicaid improves access to preventive care and reduces medical debt. Policy experts argue that insurers should reimburse telehealth at the same rate as in-person care. Mental health parity laws exist, but research shows they are often weakly enforced, leaving patients undercovered. Broadband investment in rural areas is viewed as essential for equitable access to health care. Training programs for nurses and frontline workers in obesity and mental health improve patient outcomes. Surprise billing laws reduce unexpected costs, but enforce and patient awareness remain limited. Stronger VA on VA partnership could close gaps for veterans in areas without facilities, right? Some shared values, right? So according to surveys, most Americans agree that dignity and respect should be at the center of healthcare. Research shows bipartisan support for lowering prescription drug prices would be a good thing. Nearly all Americans agree that costs should not force families to choose between healthcare and rent or food. Public polling shows widespread support for preventive care like vaccines and screenings. Transparency in healthcare pricing is a value most patients demand across political lines. Families agree that children deserve healthy school environment, including access to nurses and mental health support. Call to action. According to the CDC, public health improves when communities are actively involved in designing solutions. Patients who share their healthcare stories bring visibility to gaps and inspire reforms. Local policy engagement like supporting schools, health programs, or food access initiative creates real change. Nonprofits working in mental health, obesity, and veterans care rely on community donations and volunteers. Federal and state advocacy for insurance reform can pressure lawmakers to act. Patients are encouraged to ask providers about telehealth and remote monitoring options. Peer support network reduce stigma and foster connections, showing the power of community. I'm telling you right now, right now, today's episode, though, you know, I mean, there's so much to unpack, but you know, I can't go through all everything that I really want to unpack today when it comes to the healthcare and the disparities that a lot of people feel when it comes to their healthcare, right? A lot of people in the poor community, in the rural areas, you know what I mean, lack access to healthcare. Those people need the help, right? A lot of veterans that's out there that are homeless, and there should not be not one homeless veteran that's out there at all. None. Should not be none. You know what I mean? Those veterans should get the help that they deserve. People who have lack of health care should get the help that they deserve. And thank you so much. And this is my time. So thank you for tuning into Common Ground. Until next time, keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.